friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. World football's governing body, FIFA, says it will not suspend Nigeria over a leadership crisis, but will continue to closely monitor the situation. In a statement, FIFA said it received confirmations that the legitimate leadership of the Nigeria Football Federation is under President Amaju Pinnick. FIFA gave Nigeria a deadline to make sure Pinnick was in charge or else face a ban. For reaction, reporter Iron Mike Mbonye called Port Harcourt, where he reached the sports editor of Nigeria's Silver Bird Media Group, Gabenga James.
My immediate reaction is that as a Nigerian, very happy that the country escaped a potential ban or suspension from the World Football Governing Body, FIFA. Because looking at what the casualties would have been if the FIFA hammer had fallen on Nigeria, I mean, it would do incalculable damage to football and to the potentials of many and the young talented footballers in this country. So on that note, I'm very happy that at least temporarily, let me say temporarily, we have been able to escape this potential ban from FIFA.
How do we remove Nigerian football forward now?
Okay, well, for me, because if you take a second look at the statement released by FIFA, where they said, okay, for now, Nigeria has escaped suspension or ban. One of the paragraphs says the World Football Governing Body, FIFA, will continue to monitor situation in the country until everything that FIFA wants is strictly adhered to. Now, that is where I have my concern. Because in the recent times, in the last 6 weeks or thereabouts, we have experienced a lot of back and forth. At this, you hear that Amaju Pinnick has been led back to occupy the NFF office by security agents. In another few days, you hear that Chris Gilbert has stormed the NFF headquarters, accompanied by security agents, and he has taken over. Now, we cannot afford to have this kind of back and forth again. It has become a vicious cycle. So this problem has to be tackled from the root once and for all. Because for as long as QRC has his cases in court, he's armed with the court judgments he's relying on to storm the NFF at any time it catches his fancy. The authorities in the country to be able to find a way to prevail on Chris Giwa to, number one, withdraw all his cases from the law court. Now, when the cases are withdrawn from the law court, which I think is a very fundamental part of this problem, FIFA does not want football matters taken to the law courts. So Giwa must be made to understand that this is strictly football matter. Withdraw this matter from the court. You have exhausted the only accepted channel, which is through the FIFA and through the Court of Arbitration for Sport. And in those places, you have not been accepted. You have not been recognized. So face your feet. Then maybe the powers that be, you can also try to find their apartment between Chris Giwa and Amaju Pinnick. Yeah, there might be compromise here and there. I mean, it's like horse trading. Some grounds also may be yielded to Chris Giwa, and they give him some soft landing, maybe get him unbanned because he's banned from football-related matters as it stands now, so that he can also, well, forget about what has happened and we can have sustained peace and tranquility in our football.
The NFF Executive Committee, led by Amaju Pinnick and recognized by FIFA, is set to hold elections on the 22nd of September. How do you think they can use the election to resolve the lingering crisis?
It can be. The first thing is that, Giwa, of course, he has not made secret of his ambition to become the NFF president. And I think as every Nigerian, he inalienable rights to nurse any ambition and to aspire to any office in the land. So, but now his stance is disqualified because of the FIFA ban on him. So if there is a way the NFF can help to get him unbanned, I think that would be the first thing to do, and that may be the right direction to go. Get him unbanned, then if he's still interested in vying for the office, he can also pick the form and maybe find a way to rearrange the timetable so that every interested party can be seen to have been carried along. You understand? And if there are policies that are stumbling blocks to some people's aspirations, remove all the stumbling blocks. Let it be open to every Nigerian who is qualified and is ambitious enough to vie for that position. So that when they all go to the polls and at the end of the day, Congress will choose who they want to head the NFF Executive Committee. So that at the end of the election, we don't have aggrieved parties. We don't have people that will start going to the law courts again to say, well, they made sure we're not bad, we're disenfranchised, we're not allowed allowed to vie for positions on the NFF board. So I think this election is very crucial, and it can be used as a strategic master's stroke to heal all the wounds in our football.
That's Gabenga James, the sports editor of Nigeria's Silverbird Media Group. He spoke with reporter Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Port Harcourt, Nigeria. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Joining us once again on the program is Stephen Goff, the soccer writer for the Washington Post newspaper. Steve, welcome back to the show.
Thanks a lot. Great to join you.
Steve, last week you wrote about English star Wayne Rooney and a remarkable play that he was involved in at the new Audi Field right here in Washington. And I'll quote you now, Steve. You described it as a play that will surely go down as one of the most extraordinary in DC United's 23-season history and endear the English forward to the local faithful for years to come. For the international faithful listeners to VOA, Steve, can you recap that play for those who maybe didn't see it or didn't hear about it?
Well, DC United was in a tie game with Orlando in the final few minutes, and they're in a situation where they really need to win. If they want to make a playoff push, they can't afford any more draws, especially at home. So they pulled the goalkeeper, pushed him into the attack on a corner kick. They didn't score on the corner kick. Orlando counterattacked. The DC goalkeeper was out of position. They had not a breakaway, but they had possession, pushing into midfield. Player was getting ready to fire the ball into an open net. Rooney made a hard charge back, made a perfect slide tackle, repossessed the ball, and then made a few touches and served up a long diagonal cross to an Argentine player, Luciano Acosta, for a header in the dying moments, and DC United won the game.
Symbolically, Steve, did that kind of say, hey, I've arrived here in Washington, talking about Rooney?
I think it showed that his heart is really into this. There's always some question about, international stars who come to MLS and whether they're fully invested and are here for more than just the money. And, you know, Rooney, up to that point, had certainly proved he's in, you know, he's involved, he's engaged. But that play certainly caught the attention of fans worldwide and resulted in a dramatic victory for DC United.
Since that great play by Rooney, he's had some more good performances, two goals in a 4-1 victory over the Portland Timbers. What has he brought to the attack, Steve, for DC United?
Well, he's a world-class striker, and he has immense skill and finishing prowess. He attracts a lot of attention, which alleviates some pressure on his teammates. And he works hard. And you can see the chemistry and the coordination between players on DC United vastly improved since his arrival last month.
I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. I'm talking with Stephen Goff, the soccer writer for the Washington Post newspaper. Steve, with the arrival of Rooney, DC United back in the playoff race, can you update our listeners, Steve, on DC United's position and the standings in its conference?
Six teams will make the playoffs from the Eastern Conference. There are 2 months left in the season. DC United currently stands in eighth place. But the thing is, they've played far fewer games than every other team in the league. And so they have the opportunity to make up ground in the coming weeks when they're playing and other teams are not. They're in a good position. They still have to go out and win these games or at least get a draw in some of them, especially on the road. So, will they make the playoffs? Things are looking a lot better now than they did 2 weeks ago. but they, you know, they still have to earn a few more results.
Wayne Rooney getting a lot of attention for DC United, but you also wrote about a Ghana-born defender for DC United recently, Steve, Kofi Opari. What does he mean to the team?
Kofi was a regular starter last year. He lost his spot this year after the team made some roster moves in the offseason. He also had to combat injuries in the middle of the season. And, you know, DC United's defense was showing some weakness, and they decided to go back to Kofi a few weeks ago. And he and Steve Birnbaum have formed a strong partnership in central defense, and United has allowed, I think it's now 5 goals in the last 5 matches. So they've shored up the defensive effort, and Kofi has been a big part of that.
Last month, Steve, DC United officially opened a new 20,000-seat soccer-specific stadium, Audi Field, in Southwest Washington. What are your impressions of the stadium and maybe some of the favorite features that have caught your eye?
The stadium is in the middle of the city. It's in an area called Buzzard Point, which is 1.5 miles from the U.S. Capitol. It's at the confluence of the Potomac and Anacostia Rivers. It's 2 blocks from Nationals Park, the baseball stadium. It's about a 10-12 minute walk from the metro station, so the location is very good. You know, when DC United was looking for a new location for a venue, you know, there was a strong possibility they'd end up in the suburbs or possibly far outside the city where public transportation public transportation is not as readily available or in close proximity to the stadium. So they're in a good place. It's a part of the city that was long forgotten, but with the arrival of the baseball stadium and other commercial developments in that area, it's really a nice backdrop and location for a soccer stadium, an area that will continue to grow. There are plans for housing and restaurants and all kinds of mixed-use opportunities in an area right near both rivers.
I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. I'm talking with Stephen Goff, the soccer writer for the Washington Post newspaper. Steve, Wayne Rooney, definitely one of the top storylines in MLS this season. What about maybe a couple other storylines that you think are worth mentioning?
Well, there's a Venezuelan forward named Joseph Martinez at Atlanta, who has already tied the single-season scoring record. And with 2 months left in the season, he'll break it and actually destroy it by the time he's done this year. 27 goals for, you know, the leading contender for the MLS Cup this year, Atlanta United. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, the Swedish forward who's played in big clubs in Europe, he's playing for the Los Angeles Galaxy, has performed well, drawn a lot of attention to his team and to the league. He's certainly a good one. Both New York teams are good this year, the New York Red Bulls and New York City FC. The attendance figures in Atlanta continue to be strong. There are some games where they draw more than 70,000 fans for their home games. So, you know, it's been a good year for MLS. In a World Cup year in which the U.S. did not participate, there have been some challenges for American soccer. And, you know, MLS continues to grow. It's been a decent season so far.
Finally, Steve, do you think MLS will continue to go after maybe long-in-the-tooth players like Rooney and Ibrahimovic? I know David Beckham, in the twilight of his career, played in MLS. Or do you see maybe a movement toward developing the younger players?
Well, I mean, it's the big-name players who come over take a lot of the attention away from the fact that the league in general has added a lot of younger, lesser known players. A guy like Joseph Martinez, Venezuelan, is going to set this record, like I said. For the most part, these are outliers. You know, guys like Rooney, Ibrahimovic, they make the big money, but for the most part, teams are building their rosters through, you know, South American and Central American player pools.
Stephen Goff is the soccer writer for the Washington Post newspaper. Steve, thanks for chatting with us once again.
My pleasure. Anytime.
I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Olympic sprint champion Usain Bolt celebrated his 32nd birthday on Tuesday in his first training session with Australia's Central Coast Mariners Football Club. With that and more soccer news, here's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Yes, Usain Bolt's birthday cake may come a little later, but the Olympic champion started his day with a light training session at Australia's Central Coast Stadium. Bolt kicked the ball around with his prospective teammates with two things in mind: to seal an A-League contract with the Mariners for the upcoming season and, as he told the media, to prove the doubters wrong.
For me, people are always going to say what they want to say. Just like when I was in track and field, people say a lot of things about me, but I always prove them wrong. So it's just another moment for me to prove people wrong. As I said, I'm not setting any standards. I'm just working, pushing myself. And when I feel like I've done enough, I'll ask the coach, like, how do I look? What I need to work on? Do you feel I can continue this? Do you feel like I need to push more? What can I do to be better? You know what I mean? So for me, that's my focus. I don't care what people say.
The Mariners' decision to add Bolt's name to their training roster was met with mixed reaction among Australian fans of the sport. The Mariners operate in one of the country's smallest soccer markets, and last season they finished at the bottom of the 10-team A-League. Therefore, skeptics view the team's link with Bolt as a shameless gimmick to boost the profile of the club. They say the focus should instead be given to young Australian players. But Mariners coach Mike Mulvey told reporters he rejects the notion that Bolt's trial run is merely a publicity stunt.
This guy's a winner. How many gold medals he won? Eight gold medals in the Olympics. Now, you don't do that just by having great ability. You do it by having great mental capacity. Now, if he can pass on a little bit of that to my players, who I'm saying were coming from the cellar, to try and get to the, you know, to the top. This could be great for any of our young lads that we've signed.
And Bolt says he became an Olympic gold medalist for a reason, and the work ethic is the same.
It's just like track and field, you know what I mean? The first day of training is always the roughest one. You can tell how much work you need to put in, what you need to do, but it felt okay, you know what I mean? I know it's going to take time and work, and I'm ready to work.
Bolt says he's looking forward to one day bringing home a trophy, but for now, he just wants to focus on the finer points of the game.
I'm not setting myself like any targets to say, all right, this is what I'm going to do. I'm just going to put in the work, you know what I mean? This is my first chance getting a chance to train and to get to a level to play as a professional footballer, so I don't know what to expect. So I'm just here to push myself, learn as much as possible. As I told the coach from the start, listen, I'm here with a blank slate. No matter what I've learned or what I've seen on TV, for me, it's a blank slate. I'm here to learn and to get better, and that's my focus.
Bolt will train with the Mariners team for an indefinite period of time. Head coach Mike Mulvey says he's happy for Bolt to stay with the team for a year if that's what he needs to fulfill his ambition of being a professional football player. The 2018-19 season begins in October. Staying with soccer, let's go now from Australia to England. Soccer's European governing body announced on Tuesday that former England captain David Beckham will receive the 2018 UEFA Presidential Award. Beckham was hailed by the president of UEFA as a true football icon of his generation. Beckham's remarkable career spanned over 20 years, and the award recognizes his outstanding achievements as a global ambassador for football and for his humanitarian efforts that have helped the lives of children around the world. Beckham will become only the third Englishman to receive the UEFA Presidential Award, and he says receiving it is an honor. The award ceremony will take place later this year in Monaco. Still with UEFA, on Monday, the governing body announced that new Juventus striker Cristiano Ronaldo, Real Madrid midfielder Luka Modric, and Liverpool forward Mohamed Salah have been shortlisted for the UEFA Player of the Year Award. Modric won the Best Player Award at this year's World Cup and finished in second place with Croatia. Mo Salah scored 44 goals for Liverpool last season and helped the English club reach the Champions League final. And Ronaldo, who won the Player of the Year Award last season, is the only player to have made the shortlist every year since the award was created in 2011. The UEFA Player of the Year Award will also be presented in Monaco during the Champions League group stage draw on August 30th. More soccer news to come. Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Gwen mentioned Mohamed Salah in her report. The Egyptian star played a big role in Liverpool's 2-0 victory Monday at Crystal Palace. Salah was brought down in the last minute of the first half, and Liverpool teammate James Milner converted the penalty kick. In the 75th minute, Crystal Palace defender Aaron Wan-Bissaka was shown a straight red card for fouling Salah. And Mo Salah and Liverpool made the most of their man advantage in the final 15 minutes. In stoppage time, Salah assisted on Senegalese teammate Sadio Mane's third goal of the season. Final score from Selhurst Park in London, Liverpool 2, Crystal Palace 0. Liverpool now has the maximum 6 points after two matches. Crystal Palace has one win and one loss for 3 points. With the English Premier League kicking off a new season, Liverpool is one of six clubs that has won its opening two matches. The five others are Bournemouth, Tottenham Hotspur, Watford, Chelsea, and defending champion Manchester City, which is at the top of the table with 8 goals scored and 1 given up. In auto racing news, Canadian IndyCar driver Robert Wickens had titanium rods and screws placed in his spine to stabilize a fracture from a spinal cord injury suffered in a dramatic crash Sunday at Pocono Raceway in Pennsylvania. The 29-year-old Wickens also suffered injuries to his lower extremities, right arm and spine, and a pulmonary contusion. IndyCar said in a statement Tuesday that the severity of the spinal cord injury is unknown. Wickens is expected to have more surgeries. He's in stable condition at a hospital in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Now, his car sailed into the fence at Pocono when he and Ryan Hunter Ray made slight contact. Hunter Ray's car spun, and Wickens's car launched over it and into the fence. A large hole was torn into the fence, and the race was delayed for 2 hours to repair the damage. And we here at the Sunny Side of Sports certainly send good wishes to Robert Wickens after that frightening crash at Pocono Raceway in Pennsylvania. I encourage our VOA listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. And that wraps up the August 21st edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to VOA producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Peter Hundley. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Democratic Republic of the Congo will hold an election in December, hopefully leading to a peaceful democratic transfer of power for the first time in the country's history. Sitting President Joseph Kabila came to power in 2001, having succeeded his father, Laurent Désiré Kabila, after his assassination. Joseph Kabila was elected president in 2006 for a 5-year term and re-elected in 2011. Though his second term ended in 2016 and the DRC constitution prevents him from seeking a third term, elections were not held and Kabila remained in power. Following protests in September 2016, Kabila's ruling party and the opposition signed an agreement known as the Saint-Sylvestre Agreement on December 31, 2016. The agreement paved the way for elections, prohibited Kabila from running for re-election or changing the constitution, and committed the DRC government to a number of confidence-building measures intended to create the political space necessary for credible elections. In November 2017, DRC's National Independent Electoral Commission finally announced for December 23, 2018. Many feared President Kabila would nevertheless attempt to run for an illegal third term, but those fears were allayed on August 8th, the deadline for registering presidential candidates, when the DRC government spokesman announced that Kabila would not seek re-election. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, the ruling coalition's announcement of a consensus candidate, other than President Kabila, represents a significant step forward for Congolese democracy, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert in a written statement. We are encouraged by this sign that Kabila intends to uphold his commitments to the Congolese constitution and the terms of the December 2016 Saint-Sylvestre Agreement by not seeking a third term. Government, opposition, and civil society leaders, along with the heads of the security services, share with President Kabila the responsibility of ensuring full respect for democratic norms. The Congolese people must be free to express their views and choose from the candidates without fear of violence, threats, or intimidation. We call on DRC's National Independent Electoral Commission and Congolese authorities to take the necessary steps to guarantee credible elections on December 23, 2018, said Heather Nauert. The DRC has an historic opportunity to ensure a peaceful transfer of power in December, and the United States looks forward to supporting this process in accordance with the established electoral calendar.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
I'm Lino Armoudou, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we will discuss violence against children and how to best protect this vulnerable population. Our guest is Birgit Lund-Herrington, Chief of Child Protection with UNICEF Uganda. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, VOA presents a Straight Talk Africa Town Hall special, Martin Luther King, A Global Vision for Justice. Join us as VOA and American University team up to explore the conscious connection between Dr. King and Africa, live from American University in Washington, D.C.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.